So here's the deal. You know, we sit right now, Cross Point sits at a crossroads. We're at a crossroads, you know, two intersecting crossroads. And we're at a place, a really fun place, where we don't have to do anything. We could actually, we don't have to go left, we don't have to go right. We could stay right where we are. And we got comfy seats, right? You can enjoy the nice comfy seats, nice coffee, phenomenal music. And we got, you know, videos on the screens, make us feel really good about, you know, the initiatives we're doing. I don't have anybody coming to me saying, man, there's not a groundswell of, Kurt, could we do something really challenging and difficult over the next 3 years? Nobody's asking that. And that's why we're at a crossroads. Because we never grow when we're in those places. So there's two streets that are intersecting and basically asking the question of whether we're going to go forward or whether we're going to go stagnant. And so, you know, one of those streets is that of the spiritual. And so for these next 6 weeks, we're going to be talking about the healthy thing that Jesus talked about all the time. We're going to be talking about money and resources. And Jesus talked about money and resources all the time. In fact, he talked about money more than he talked about love. He talked about money more than he talked about heaven. He talked about money more than he talked about prayer. He talked about money more than anything else. Why is that? Well, it's because he understood that money was kind of the chief competitor for the affections of our heart toward him. See, money tries to be what only God can be for us. And so, you know, when we start poking around at money a little bit, we actually find out what our heart beats really fast after. And so one of the healthiest things we can do right now as a team is to go through a six-week journey where we wrestle with the spiritual power of money in our lives. The other avenue or the other street at this crossroads is that of the financial. And there are things that we feel like God is calling us to do and to continue to do, even at a larger scale, that prayer alone is not going to accomplish. I mean, I'm pro-prayer. I pray a lot. I encourage you to do the same. But they're beyond just us sitting and praying. It requires action. You know, one of the things we do around here is volunteer. We love volunteers. This place fuels. If you're a volunteer, let me see your hand up in the air right now. Look at that. Let's thank these people. These people make Cross Point go. You know, we love volunteers. It's the fuel that creates life change around this place. And yet some of these things are beyond just a few more volunteers. The key barrier that we're looking at as God is calling to some of these next new and continue to do what we're doing is an infusion of cash that allows us to take our game to a much broader level, continuing to bring spiritual freedom to our neighbors, our friends, that spreads all throughout the world. And you and I are going to get the chance to decide if we want a front row seat to be a part of that or not. So with these two things in the crosshairs, we believe this is just going to set us up for some really amazing and powerful things over the next 6 weeks. So really glad you're here this morning. Go ahead and stand with me. I want to pray for us as we embark on this journey and get this thing rolling. So let me pray. God, thank you that we can come into this room today. Thank you for your grace, first and foremost. And God, whether we're here for the first time or we've been here many weeks, man, if we're here for the first time, we're thinking, holy cow, what is going on here today? Well, I'll tell you what's going on. We are going to get a glimpse of what your heart gets hot after God. And I just pray that all of us see that and begin to experience that in an increased way. God, for those of us who call ourselves a part of this team, God, I just pray that you would grow us, you would continue to help us come to new understandings, new challenges that you're calling us into. And God, I just pray that you, even right now, begin to bring about the change that will not only take us to a new place, but will take this community, this tribe, our neighbors, our friends, people all over the world that are in bondage to absolute new places. So begin to change us right now.
In 2009, Malcolm Gladwell wrote this article for The New Yorker called How David Beats Goliath. In it, he explains that when underdogs fight differently, they often win, even when everything we think we know about power says they shouldn't. He gives an example of this girl's basketball coach who had never coached. He'd never even played basketball. And here he was stuck with this group of inexperienced 12-year-old girls. Needless to say, the odds were majorly stacked against them. This coach needed to find a way, any way, to give his team an advantage. So he decided to run a full court press every game, the entire game. And even though what they were doing was perfectly legal, it frustrated the other teams. And the other coaches complained that this was not the way you were supposed to play the game. But that rookie coach and this inexperienced group of girls made it all the way to the championship. They didn't break any rules, but they changed the game, and they won.
Well, you know, this really is how God works in the world. In fact, you know, the underdogs, the little guys, really can do big things when we choose a different attitude and we say, you know, I'm gonna choose a different weapon, and in the end, we actually change the game. And the Bible is all about God changing the game. In fact, one of my favorite phrases from the Bible is where God says, my ways are not your ways. And in essence, he's saying, hey, your ideas of going forward, your ideas of a good life, your ideas of success, God says, those aren't necessarily my ways. My ways are different ways than your standard operating principles. And so this is part of what the story of David and Goliath, which is the story we're going to look at today, is really all about. And there's all kinds of principles we can learn from David and Goliath and this story saying that takes place back in the Old Testament that has huge implication for where we stand today. So as we look at this, you know, back in the Old Testament, God was trying to create a different structure for kingships at that particular time in the world. He's trying to set up Israel, the nation of Israel, in a different way. And he structured this kingdom in a different way. He wanted to change the game. And basically that was by not inserting a strong king figure into their nation. And so the Israelite nation was kind of in their infancy, and they're looking around at other nations, and they're like, well, gosh, we don't have a king. You know, everybody else around us has a king. God, we don't have a king. God, we want a king. And apparently, God is flexible. This is very fascinating to me. In fact, God looks around, and he's like, all right, you want a king? You can have a king. And which is an interesting character study when you look at certain moments in the character of God where he actually changes his mind. And so he says, okay, I really prefer you not have a king. I set you up that way, but if you really think you need a king, all right, you can have a king. So they go out and they try to get, you know, the best king. They get a great manly king. I mean, if you're going to get a king, man, get a good king, right? If you get to choose one. And so they get Saul, whose head's taller than anybody else. Saul is a manly man. He's charismatic, energetic, catalytic. I mean, he is everything you would hope for a king to be. And Saul has a good run until he begins to lose it. And one of the reasons he loses it is because his heart begins to chase after other things. And eventually he makes a string of bad decisions, and he actually gets disqualified from being the king of the nation of Israel. So God goes to the kind of the chief guru of the nation of Israel, a guy by the name of Samuel, and he says, Samuel, I need you to begin to go look for Saul's successor. It's time to anoint a new king. I want you to go to the house of Jesse. So Samuel goes and he finds Jesse's house. Jesse's got a boatload of kids, boatload of sons. He lines them all up. And Samuel's kind of tied into the ways of the world as well. He's kind of tied into, you know, looking for the exterior, what looks good on the outside, some of the things that, you know, traditionally you would think of in a king, all the great charismatic traits, you know, the personality that can, you know, that can woo anybody, you know, somebody who's pleasant to look at. And so he sees the tallest and the oldest son of Jesse's kids, his boy. And he says, I think he's the one that's supposed to be king. And then here's what God says. God says, for the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. So God says, you know, Samuel, this isn't the one, and you just got busted on how the game is normally played. All right, we're looking for a different kind of king right here. He says, I'm about inward purity. I'm about inward character, inward drive, inward connection. And isn't this still the way it is today? I mean, even in the political platform right now, as we're watching all these debates, I mean, isn't the one who's the best looking and, you know, has the smoothest words and the best outward speech the one that always seems to win? I mean, versus the one who has the best thoughts or maybe the best plans? I mean, you're not going to find anybody on the cover of any magazine, right, that's not, like, you know, good looking. I mean, nobody bad looking is going to be put on a magazine, right? I mean, the external experience always is what we're going after. I mean, how many newscasters have you seen that are just bad looking? I mean, we've got a few hot ones in Indianapolis, but I mean, what they say to ones that are bad looking, they're like, you need to be on radio. Except for you, Eric. Everybody else, you need to be on radio. All right? We don't want to see you. We just want to hear you. And God's saying, hey, I'm interested not on the exterior. I want to know what's going on the inside. So God says to Samuel, this one, it's not the one. So Samuel enters into an attitude of prayer. He begins to look over the rest of the sons of Jesse. And he just says, is there not any more? I mean, is this it? Is this all I have to pick from? And they say, well, you know, we've got this little kid brother that's out watching sheep in the field. And when Samuel hears this, he realizes that the fact that this young brother's out watching sheep means he's the least valuable of the bunch. He's the least esteemed because, I mean, sheep are like dirty, disgusting characters. All right, and so they're like, well, we'll just stick him out with the sheep. And so Samuel goes and finds him, and as soon as he meets him, he feels like God tells him, this is the next king of Israel. So Samuel anoints this little shepherd boy, David, as the next king of the nation of Israel. Now, they're kind of in this in-between phase right now where Saul doesn't necessarily understand that his run as a king is over. And David, on the other hand, is just beginning to realize, wow, I've got a really bright future ahead of me. And so David kind of has a foot in both camps. I mean, he has a foot in the camp out in the shepherd field still. He still goes out in his dad's fields and takes care of the sheep. And then there's times where he steps over and he runs up to the army of the nation of Israel, and he's kind of serving behind the lines, behind the enemy lines. And so he's kind of back and forth in these two environments. And it's during this back and forth period of time where he actually is out with the nation of Israel, with their army, and he sees that they're in a stalemate, meaning the nation of Israel is up on this hill, and there's a valley, and then on the other hill is the nation of the Philistines. And they're stalemated because nobody wants to make the first move. So they're just watching, trying to figure out who's going to go first, who's going to go first. And the reason they're stalemated is because whoever goes down into the valley first is in a very precarious position. And so, you know, you're just going to get smashed if you go into the valley first, so they're in a stalemate position. And so David sees this, and then all of a sudden, now the nation of the Philistines, they have this like super ultimate fighting champion by the name of Goliath, and he is like a freak of nature, right? He's a freak of nature, and he comes down into the valley, and he says to the nation of Israel, who wants me? Who wants me? Who's going to come into the valley from the nation of Israel and fight me? I'm the ultimate champion. Who's going to come fight me and solve this standoff once and for all? Now, Goliath is like a freak of nature. I mean, he's like 9 feet tall, 650 pounds. He is armored to the hilt. He's got a spear and a sword for medium and short range fighting. He's got a javelin in his hip for long range fighting. I mean, this dude, he comes down into the valley 2 times a day. He's done this for 40 days. For 40 days, he's come into the valley and he said, hey, who wants me? Who from the nation of Israel is finally going to step up and resolve this standoff? And all of a sudden, David stumbles upon the army of the nation of Israel at one of the moments where some 40 days into Goliath doing this every day, he stumbles off and he sees Goliath come in the valley and be like, hey, who's stepping up? And David's like, whoa, do you guys not see what's happening right here? I mean, you know, is nobody stepping up? Why is nobody stepping up? See, the nation of Israel, they're kind of sitting back watching. All right, they know they've got a big problem in front of them, but they kind of want to assume that big problem eventually is going to go away. Hey, let me tell you something about your life. All right, if you've got a big problem in your life that you assume is just going to go away, it's not going to go away. All right, if you're staring a Goliath down in your life, it's not going to just go away. I see this all the time. I see marriages that are tanking. You know, marriages are just going down, down, down. And we'll meet with a couple, and they'll be like, well, I'm not changing, you know, because they're not changing, and she did this, and he, you know. They're in a stalemate. They're just staying where they are. I mean, we see this with people in addictions. You know, people in addictions that realize, man, I've got to change. I know I need to change, but I think I'm just going to stay right where I am. I've talked to people who don't ever want to go to their mailbox. Never want to walk to their mailbox because they're in so much credit card debt. They'd rather not even see that bill than to look at the Goliath in their life straight in the eyes. Listen, I've been there. I've been there. I've been in that situation. I mean, you may have to eat oatmeal for like 3 years, all right? Every day to create some change to attack that Goliath, but the Goliaths aren't going to go away. And one of the things we're doing in Game Change is we're saying, hey, if you're connected here at Crosspoint, we want to ask you to be willing to step up and address the Goliaths in our world that are preventing spiritual freedom. And we can't assume that we can just ignore it and it's going to go away. It's not going to go away. So David, he notices this. He says, you know what? I'll engage. I'll step up. And as soon as he does this, nobody takes him seriously. Nobody. In fact, first thing I want us to see about David is that Davids are small and they're rarely taken seriously. Davids are always small and they're rarely taken seriously. See, David looks at this situation, and as he looks at this situation, he decides, man, I'm going to take on Goliath's challenge. And even his brother and King Saul laugh at him and say, you can't do that. In fact, here's what it says. It says, now Eliab, the eldest brother of David, heard that he spoke to the men. And Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, why have you come down? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? See the little digs, not just like your sheep, those few sheep. I mean, you're like a peon. I know your presumption and the evil of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle. He's like, dude, you're a slacker, man. You're my kid brother. You're a slacker. You just don't want to work for the day. You're just coming down to get a picture of what's going on. I mean, they don't believe he can do anything. And then on to Saul a few verses later, and Saul said to David, you're not able to go up against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, and he has been a man of war from his youth. Saul's like, man, dude, you are new to the game. This dude, Goliath, has been fighting since he was your age and even younger. Nobody takes David seriously. So here's what's interesting. Here's the thing that most of us may or may not believe. I don't know. When I read this story, we at Crosspoint, we're the David in this story. Right, we're not the Goliath, we're the David right here. You know, and now in relationship to churches across America, CrossPoint's doing really good. I mean, we're in like the 96th percentile of growth and size and impact, and you know, and you know, but there's churches way bigger than us. But you know, most churches in America, 70% of churches are 100 people or less. Right, 80% of churches in America are declining or plateaued. I mean, we've never been any of those things. There's no indicators that indicate we'll ever be in that range. I mean, things have been going really good for us at Crosspoint. But see, here's the thing. We never compare ourselves to other churches. Right? We don't take our cues from what other churches are doing. You know, we love all different kinds of churches. We think God uses different kinds of churches. It's wonderful. It's all wonderful. We just never compare ourselves against that. Right, we compare ourselves against the concepts in the Bible. We compare ourselves against the concepts of what it means to be a part of the kingdom of God. And we don't view ourselves as competition. Listen, man, there's so many churches around here, but do you realize that if every single one of them were filled to the max four times every weekend, we would be reaching maybe 25% of our county, maybe 25%. The redemptive potential of our community is huge. Do you realize that there are hundreds of thousands of people in our community, your neighbors, your friends, people that live right around you that cannot articulate what the cross means? Do you realize that? They know it hangs on a wall, but they can't articulate that that cross is proof of God's love. They can't articulate that my sin is actually on that cross. They can't articulate that what God did on that cross shows how valuable I am to him and that God actually paid himself for all of my indiscretions. They can't articulate that. That's a problem. You realize that there's a problem that hundreds of thousands of our neighbors and our people that we interact with every day that live in our neighborhoods, we work with, go to school with, don't know there's a Holy Spirit that comes and actually gives us power to do things and to operate in ways that we otherwise could not operate in. That's a problem. You realize that there are people in our community that have never encountered their creator that created them and that he actually wants to have a relationship with them. That's a problem. I mean, last weekend, I mean, we had a great game day weekend, right? Who enjoyed game day last week? Anybody enjoy it? Yeah, it's awesome, awesome, awesome. Talk about a game change weekend. It's always a game change weekend. We had nearly 700 people here last weekend. I look at that, I'm like, no freaking big deal. There are hundreds of thousands of people in our community that have no connection with a church that speaks a dialect that actually helps them grow in what it means to know God. Hundreds of thousands of people. We've got so far to go. So far to go. That's a Goliath problem. We're like a David. Right? And David's, they see the opportunity. They're like, man, we want to step up right here. But David's they're doing things different. They're kind of new players on the scene, and they're rarely taken seriously. So David's bold right here, and he's bold because of his relationship with God. So the second thing I want us to see is David's strength is in God's identity. His strength is in God's identity. Take a look at what David says about the grief he's been receiving from King Saul and his brothers. It says, and David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go and the Lord be with you. David says, man, my strength doesn't come from my physical abilities. My strength comes from God. I mean, I've seen what God can do in my midst. I've fought off bears in the field protecting sheep. I've been out as a sheep herder. I've fought off lions. I've saved my own life, you know, because God's power has been with me. He's like, this is the same God that has given me this stone to sling, and I'm just going up against another mere human being. I'll be 9.5 feet tall. I mean, I know that my strength is in God's ability, not my identity, and this pushes him forward. See, one of the cool things here at Crosspoint is we're not confident in the history of Crosspoint. What we're confident in is the power of God that's worked in the history of Crosspoint. That's where our strength and trust comes. We believe God still works through teams of people, through communities of people who are wanting to run hard after what God's heart runs after. Third thing David does, the Davids in the world use different weapons. David uses different weapons. See, Saul, he comes to David, and I think he's doing the best he can. He's like, all right, David, you've had your time in the field with the beast. I mean, that's not quite, you know, measuring up to going against Goliath, but we're going to let you take a shot at it. So Saul goes and gets his best armor and his weapons and tries to equip David. So he gives him, you know, his sword, and this sword would have been the sharpest sword in the land, would have been the lightest sword in the land. I mean, this is the king's sword. He brings his armor, and he gives his armor to David. This would have been the strongest armor, the lightest armor, the armor that only a king would wear. And he brings this to David, and he puts it on David, and David takes these weapons and these methods on himself, and he's going, oh, man, these just don't fit me. I mean, this is, I feel out of my skin right here. And you know what he does? He sheds them all. He sheds them all. And he takes it off and he says, I'm going to fight with a different weapon. I'm changing the game. And he goes and he gets this little slingshot. All right, we think of a little slingshot. Now, this wasn't like the little Saturday morning cartoon slingshot, you know, where they're like, you know, pink. You know, let me shoot a pebble. This was like a long strap of leather that had a pouch on the end that would hold a rock. And he would hold this thing and he would swing it. And he would get the centrifugal force moving, and he would let it go at a particular point. He's like, man, I do this all the time in the fields. I do this every day. I sit around, do target practice, fend off bears and lions. He's like, this is nothing new. This is how I protect myself and protect my sheep. The Israelites are going, this is scandalous, man. He can't go into war against Goliath with that weapon. Let me tell you what. One of the reasons we don't see change and leaps and bounds in our world today is because we are not willing to use new weapons. We always revert to the same weapons. Here's the thing. Incremental improvement of processes doesn't create game change moments. All right? You know, a little more energy, doing the same things with a little more power behind them doesn't create game change moments. Doesn't change the game. You know, many of you today, you probably arrived here today in a car. I'm guessing very few people walked in here today, all right? And so, you know, you arrived in a car because a guy by the name of Henry Ford changed the way the game was played on the automobile front a number of years ago. He invented the assembly line, all right? And so at that particular point, the whole process of building a car was one dude goes soup to nuts. I mean, he's a craftsman, and he starts assembling this car, and it takes him months to do it. And all of a sudden, at the end, he has this masterpiece that he's put together from beginning to end. And Henry Ford looks at that. He's like, man, that is way too expensive for the common person to be able to have. He said, you can't have most people can't afford a handcrafted car. And in fact, today, most of us can't, afford a handcrafted car. And so that's why very few people have Rolls Royce here today. Maybe one of us does. I don't know. And by the way, if you do have a Rolls Royce or a Bentley, man, I'd love to have lunch with you. I really would. I mean, I'd love to ask you to write the biggest check of your life that you don't sit in. All right? That for some, you don't sit in. I really would. But, you know, if you have that kind of resources, awesome. Man, God has obviously blessed you, and you have huge potential at your fingertips. But see, here's all I'm saying. It's a new day. It's a new day for all of us. We're going on a journey. We're going to see what God wants us to do. So Henry Ford, he changed the game. He said, okay, now you, instead of you assembling everything, you're going to take this nut and put it right here. Next car comes along, take this nut, put it right here. You right here, you're going to take this wheel, and you're going to slap it right here. Next car comes along, this wheel, slap it right here. He changes the game. Changes the transportation industry. See, every new frontier has had a David that was willing to change the normal mode of operandum. It's been willing to change the game. And to do that, you have to fight with different weapons. So three weapons we're going to use over these next 6 weeks as we tackle this calling, this thing God is calling this community to. Number one, we're going to be using the weapon of a thermostat instead of a thermometer. A thermostat instead of a thermometer. You've probably seen campaigns, nonprofit organizations. You know, everybody loves thermometers, right? They slap them up on stage, put them on screens, you get it in an email. You know, you will not see a thermometer here at Crosspoint, right? You won't. So we're not going to do that. We're going to use a thermostat. Because one of the things we're going to be doing over the next 6 weeks is we're going to look at how Jesus talked more about money than any other issue, because he knew that money was a central spiritual issue. All right, and so if you want to dial up your spirituality, if you want to, you know, dial up your understanding of God's character and what he's doing, if you want to dial up your spiritual fervor for God, I'll tell you what, then what you need to look at is, how do I dial up my generosity and giving? All right, it's always at the core of it is money. And I mean, if I want to know what's important to you, if I want to look at what's important to your life, I don't want to look at your calendar. I don't want to look at your daily Bible reading plan. I don't even want to hear about your beliefs. Show me where you spend your money, and I'll say, oh, that's what's important to you. See, whatever you prioritize financially, that's what's important to you. That's why Jesus said, wherever your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And see, what he meant by that is, it's like if money was like a rock, picture it like a rock that's tethered, a long tether that's connected to our hearts. And basically what Jesus is saying is, wherever you take that rock and throw it, your heart goes that direction. So if I take my money and throw it over here, I go, whoa, my heart's going to follow wherever that money goes. If I take my money and throw it over at Lily Stock, I'm going to go, whoa, I'm going to watch that Lily Stock every single day. See, wherever you throw your money, that's where your heart follows. I just saw something really fascinating about two weeks ago. And I see these every year, first of the year. They always are a little depressing to me. I was on CNN Money, and it was the cost of raising a child from 0 to 18. $245,000! I mean, I got four kids. I'm like, my word, I'm looking at $1 million. And it's interesting because, you know, for those of you who don't have kids and you don't want to have kids, you're like, that's why I don't have kids right there. I can do so much fun, you know. And for those of you who do have kids, I mean, you look at that and you're probably going, $245, I mean, all the shoes and the food and, you know, braces and movies and car insurance. Oh, crap. Car insurance. Holy cow. I'm going to pay for car insurance. You know, you're like, gosh, you know, yeah, that's $245. That's probably right. And you know what? It doesn't really bother us at all. Why is that? Because you've been throwing money at your kids. You feel like you're throwing money all the time. And wherever you throw money, guess what happens? Your heart goes there. You're very interested in what's happening with them. See, all of us, over these next 6 weeks, you're going to have a thermostat to determine how hot your heart really is. You're going to have a thermostat to kind of crank up your passions. And man, I believe you're going to see new things about God. You're going to understand new things in the spiritual realm that you've never understood before. And honestly, I think you're going to be thankful after we go through these 6 weeks. Paul Brown, the father who knew a little bit about football, started the Cleveland Browns, he would tell his athletes every training camp, as they head into the six-week stint of training camp, he'd tell them this. He'd say, in what other business can a man discover in 6 weeks what he's made of? That's what we're going to be doing over the next 6 weeks. We're going to figure out what we're made of. And just to be clear, in the end of 6 weeks, you will have a thermometer stuck up your rectum. You really will, all right? You are. Every one of us is going to have it done, all right? But the thermometer's not going to drive us, though. But what's going to happen at the end of 6 weeks is we're going to get a reading on how hot our heart is for the things that God's heart is hot about. It's going to happen. 6 weeks. We're going to figure out, man, am I interested in staying where I am, or is my heart really hot after going further after what God is calling us to? Second weapon we're going to be using is we're going to be team players instead of bystanders. All right, team players instead of bystanders. It's very common in America when we think about the church scene to think, well, you know, I walk into church, I go to church, and, you know, the ministry of the church, everything that good that happens comes from those who are paid, who get a paycheck, the professionals. I don't get where we get this phrase, go to church, right? Jesus never used that. You know what Jesus said? He didn't say, he was a game changer. He said, yeah, that's religious, you know, mumbo jumbo, go to church, go to the synagogue. He's like, I want you to be the church. That's what he said. I said, I want you to be the church. In fact, we looked at this a bit last weekend where Jesus is talking to his friends that he's called, and which is really all of us. It's just a decision of whether we accept the invitation or not. And he says this. He says, you did not choose me, but I chose and appointed you. which, by the way, you is plural right here, in case you weren't here last week, and you means all of us, all right? He says, those of you who have received me, you're on the team, all right? And I'm building into you, and he says that you should go and bear fruit and that your fruit should abide so that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give it to you. These things I command you so that you will, look at that last phrase, love one another. So you will be a blessing to other people. So you will have flowing out of you blessings to help others see how generous the Father is. He says, that's what I'm doing. The problem that there are hundreds of thousands of people in our community that can't articulate the cross, that's a problem. And it's easy for us to step back and be like, oh, wow, somebody needs to do something about that. Well, who's going to do something about that? Well, let me tell you a little secret. Let me tell you what God's plan is. God's got one plan. You know what that plan is? It's you. If God were right here, he'd lean over in the huddle and say, that plan, the only plan I have, I got plan A, and it's you, plural. And we're like, God, man, me? You better get a B plan because I'm not very good. God says, no, I've got one plan, and my plan is you. Now here at Crosspoint, we're about creating an environment in this place to help you, to help me, invite my friends, your friends, our community to come and see a God who runs and pursues them. And so let me just ask you as a teammate, if you're a teammate around this place, are you going to be a teammate or a bystander? Right? Does it bother you that there are hundreds of thousands of people around us in our neighborhoods and community that don't know what the cross means? Does it bother you that there are kids in the greater Indianapolis area that all they know right now is poverty, and they'll never know anything different unless we choose to use different weapons to continue to help lift them up and out so they can know that life no more? Does it bother you that there are girls who are kidnapped every single day in our world and go into forced prostitution, and they're given somewhere around the realm of 300 to 400 blowjobs a month? Does that bother you? Or does it bother you more that I just said blowjobs, more than the fact that it's actually happening? See, these are the things we want to continue to be about. We're fighting for people's freedom, not only here, but around the world. We've been rattling our cages saying, how can we get us out of our cush American lifestyle where we say, well, man, there's problems over there. Those aren't my problems, man. Somebody needs to address that. I'm going to stay right here in my little camp and handle my own little problems in my life. No, that all ends. We're saying we want to go after some of the Goliaths in our world, continue to go after them and say, we want to bring freedom where God has wanted us to bring freedom. I think this journey is going to help that happen. Last weapon, final weapon I want to call out today. We're going to use the weapon of full engagement. We're going to use the weapon of full engagement instead of the weapon of fair share. You'll never hear fair share thinking around here at Crosspoint. All right, you're never going to see anything about fair share. You can breathe, all right? You can like let that gasp out. All right, that should make your butt unpucker a bit this morning, all right? I mean, meaning, you're never going to hear us say, hey, here's your mount. Here's what you need to do. I mean, I talk to a lot of people from other organizations. I've talked to people where, you know, they've been really beat up by other churches in this process, where one guy was telling me he had to bring his W-2 into the leaders of the church, and he was told exactly based on his tax return what he was to bring to the table. You'll never hear that at Crosspoint. I've had people tell me they've gotten letters in the mail from churches saying, you know, here's what you need to bring to the table or pretty much you won't get services from us. You'll never get that. You'll never get a call. We may call and invite you to something. You're never going to get a number from us. We are trying to engage everyone in a spiritual journey. And this is partly why I'm being intentionally nebulous this morning on what the dollar amount of the campaign is. You notice I've been very intentional about not mentioning it. That's intentional. And you're going to hear about that. Some of you are going, man, what's the number? What's the number? I haven't been to a vision briefing. Get to a vision briefing, all right? And we'll talk more about it in the coming weeks here. But here's the thing. We will get into numbers, but the moment I give you a number on this thing, you know, here's what we do. We go, oh, okay, that number. How many people did you say attend Crosspoint? Men, women, and children. We do the math, divide that. Oh, okay, this is the number that everyone needs to bring to the table. And guess what? When that happens, everybody loses. Everybody. Because there are people in this room that are operating at the poverty line right now, and if they do the math on that, they think, holy cow, there is no way I could give above and beyond to that number. Man, this thing must be for first-class citizens, because that makes me feel like a second-class citizen. Well, you're not a second-class citizen. That's why we're not doing fair share thinking. All of us are first-class citizens, and all of us need to be engaged. If you have more money, you look at that number, you do the math, say, oh, okay, what's the fair share number? Oh, it's this? Oh, man, that's no problem at all. I'll do that today. When that happens, everybody loses. So we're going on a spiritual journey where we're going over the next 6 weeks to hear from God and hear what he is uniquely calling each one of us to. And here's the thing, God calls us to different things in different seasons. Right, so I want us to engage over these next 6 weeks and figure it out as we go. And I tell you what, you're going to get a front row seat to be a part of some amazing things. So I want you to take out your connection card. And on the back side are some next steps. And really, we've walked through these already. Eric walked through these earlier this morning. We would encourage you to be a part of each weekend. Maybe your next step is just saying, I'm going to return next weekend. Maybe your next step is saying, I'm going to do the prompts in the app, all right, so I can really do my homework and let God build into me through this process. You will get maximum growth if you engage in the weekends, the prompts, and groups. And if you haven't been to a vision briefing yet, make sure you sign up for that February 21st one. We'll try to do our best to communicate everything this is going to entail and answer questions. And I believe we are going to get reoriented personally, as a tribe, as a team, and man, there's going to be a huge impact in our community. It's going to be a very, very powerful thing. Very powerful. So David, he uses the weapon of rocks. He grabs 5 rocks. I don't know why 5. I don't know, you know, if that's what God told him. I don't know if he just grabbed 5 and he wanted to be ready. I don't know. It just says that he grabs 5 rocks and he begins to run into the valley to meet Goliath. He sees this beast of a man going, hey, who's going to step up? Who wants me? He says, man, I'll step up. I'll step up. And he runs down the hill. It's a long hill. He runs down the hill and he gets down. And Goliath sees that this little kid's running toward him with no armor, no weapons, no, at least that he can see. And Goliath is like offended. He's like, what do you guys think I am? Like a dog down here? I mean, man, is that the best you can do, is send some little kid down to fight me? I'm a beast of a man. Man, he starts taunting the nation of Israel. And David's like, man, I just showed up and brought what I know. That's what I did. I brought what I have. And he pulls this stone out. He puts it in the pouch on the end of his slingshot. He begins to whip that thing around and whip that thing around. And eventually he lets it go at just the right point. And that thing goes and it lodges itself into Goliath's head. And this beast of a man, 9.5 feet tall, falls to the ground. Falls to the ground. And experts in weapons say that somebody who knows how to use that slingshot, who's maybe practiced day in, day out, like in a field maybe, you know, protecting sheep, when they know how to let that thing go at the right moment, that stone would have been traveling at over 2,000 feet per second with the foot weight of over 5,000 pounds when it hit Goliath. Killed him instantly, put him in the ground. This guy who's been taunting David, this guy who's been taunting the nation of Israel, this guy who's been devaluing God and what God wants to do in the world and the nation of Israel, they see this little David, this little shepherd boy, their new king. They see him begin to approach this giant of a man, and they're shouting and they're, you know, they're clamoring, and all of a sudden there's a hush over the crowd. And here's what it says happens. It says David ran. See, David's still running. I mean, he's already knocked him down. He's running to him now. And it says he ran and stood over the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of his sheath. Probably the biggest sword he'd ever had in his life. I mean, he's probably barely holding on to this thing. It's so big. And it says he takes this sword and he cuts off his head with it and kills him. Just the weight of it alone. And it says when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. They fled. David goes and he picks up the head of that Philistine. He's like, changes the game. Changes the game. Because he was willing to engage and willing to fight differently. I'm telling you, over these next 6 weeks, we're going to be going after taking heads off some of the spiritual giants that are keeping people from God in our community. We're going to be taking heads off initiatives in our community that prevent people from having freedom. Some of our neighbors, I mean, just expanding reach, expanding impact. And I'm telling you, you know, if you don't want to be a part of taking heads off these giants, man, totally cool. This may not be the place for you. All right, that's what we're going after. We're engaging in Goliath-sized adjustments and initiatives. And you know, if you like nice music and nice coffee and videos that make you feel good, great, great. But here we're going to be engaging. We're going to be engaging. And so what I'm asking you to do is over the next season, over the next 6 weeks, I just want you to show up every weekend. I want you to show up. I want you to listen, process, pray, take in information, go through the app, you know, do your personal guide work, get in a group, be in discussion, attend a vision briefing. All of these things will prepare you to see what God is calling your role to be and getting a front row seat for God to work in you and through you in conquering the Goliaths. to create spiritual freedom. All right, we're going to get after it. Let's stand, and we're going to kind of sing a battle cry, if you will, that talks about how we're on the brink of something new. So let's get after it.